If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Axar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the One Beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Axar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. So let's start with an integration. And just take a deep breath. And call yourself forward, which means to visualize the integration of your true divine self, coming and filling and occupying the totality of your energy field that you associate with your body and your mind and your personal presentation into this dimension. Infuse it with your greater self, that identity that is constant and mortal, earthless, deathless, forever united, one with Source. And nothing you can ever say, think, or do in time and space can alter that perfection. That is who you are. That's who everyone is. And anything else we've added is just that, something our mind has concocted and appropriated as who we are. So as we awaken and begin to jettison the false images that we have clouded our immortal magnificence with, it's like coming to suddenly and realizing that you've always been what you thought, what you've longed for, what you have thought that you needed to evolve into or ascend into or somehow dimensionally shift into. All these are stories that we have made up to explain why we seem to, day in and day out, awaken in the same level of consciousness. And so, as we do these weekly seminars, we keep looking at ways that we can peek under the cover of our many overlays and additions and begin to allow them to simply be lifted off of us. Remember, it is not our job to change ourselves, to change the world, or to change anyone. That is the job of the inner master that speaks within our inner knowing and our intuitive self that some call the Holy Spirit. But it's really just the part of you that never forgot your original perfection, that remains still, ever one, in that perfection. And so we learn to listen to that interpretation of reality. And as we do and allow it to replace the additions that we have imported, gradually those layers begin to come off and we suddenly remain as we've always been. So it's a great uncovering, that's all. It's a returning our minds consistently to truth and allowing the truth within us, the spirit of truth, to reinterpret how we have seen ourselves and understood our reality. Now, we're going to look tonight on the topic of social media and the question of our identity. So again, let's take a deep breath and attune to the spirit of truth within you that is the knower, and ask it to present to you whatever would be for your highest revelation tonight. because that divine part of you speaks through revelation, not through memory. Had an interesting insight into that this week. I realized as I awakened, fresh from the inner plane mystery schools that we all go to when we sleep, that the reason why, in my case, for example, I don't have much memory of the things that I've done. Sometimes people will come up and they'll say to me, "Wow, I worked with you 20 years ago. We did this dolphin cruise together." That's what happened to me at a recent gathering at Brazzo. This woman comes up to me, and for the life of me, I couldn't remember. I thought, whoa, that's really strange. Why is that? And it became very evident to me that when the ego mind is not present in an action, the distilled essence rests upon the heart as knowing, but does not arise in the mind as remembering. In other words, when there's no one present in a separated self doing whatever, the mind doesn't record it. That's why as you learn to live from the authentic self, from that sacred place within the heart, from the heart's consciousness, let's say, or the Christ self, however you want to define it. When we learn to live from that place, our doing leaves no residual in the mind or in the time-space continuum. And here I'm speaking of the ego mind, not the greater mind with a capital M that we share as one with God's mind, but that part of us that sees things in terms of ego identity and separation and the doing from that separate state of identity. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. I used to think it was because I was out of my body and not focused into the third dimension so much, and maybe that was true. But the revelation was actually what settled in my spirit as a truth. It's like, oh, those were the times when the sense of otherness, of difference, and of separation was not present. And I certainly simply became the instrument through which the Divine Spirit did whatever. Of course, that's always my prayer and wish, that I of myself do nothing, but that which is greater could take over and source through this instrument. And, you know, like anyone else, some days you're on that more clearly, and some days you're not quite as aligned as others. But we're all in that process of learning to discern the authentic self with a capital S, the part of us that is absolutely one and divine forever. Now, you know, in actuality, relatively few people actually live from that level of divine realization, or if they have tapped into it, it's very difficult to sustain in an ongoing 24/7 presentation. This was common when we were living in the ashrams and we were in the caves and the Himalayas, but today many of us who are initiates and are sages and rishis from ancient times actually are called to live in the outer world, in a self-realized and God-realized state, but having it modulate into a functional reality so that, for one thing, here in the West, we're not carted off to the loony farm. You know, most people are dreamwalking. You know, they are asleep, and they don't realize they're asleep. And so if you come on the scene with too much light, like anyone who's sleeping, it's like, turn the light off, you know, I'm asleep. You know, don't bother me. And the light actually irritates and agitates the levels of darkness that prefer sleep. That's why sometimes just you walk into a room if you carry a strong light, and people's karma starts to surface, and they immediately hate you or resent you or start to attack you in some way. Why? Simply because you brought the light in too strong. So those of us who have entered as the planetary light workers, the bell ringers, those who are here to gently call to awakening, those souls who are ready to step into greater enlightenment, we're kind of not always met with a warm reception, and we have to observe a courtesy in how we bring that light forward in our lives so that it is appropriate to the level and the context. So let's just ask that whatever is our portion to receive tonight, that the divine spirit within us could bring that forward into our intuitive knowing, so that in the week ahead we may have a gradual deepening of our sense of true identity and how to appropriately present that in the world. For example, most of us today have access to some form of social media. Most of us, for example, you're listening to this radio show over global internet. Reaches into places, my gosh, I have listeners in Nepal, India, Israel, Europe, all over. And it's amazing, isn't it, that we have such a global platform and venue for the sharing of ideas. So most of us do have access to some form of social media, Facebook, Twitter, websites, blogs, and so forth. And each one of these involves some form of profile entrance inquiry as to who we are, what we believe, what we like, and what we're involved with. And, you know, of course, it doesn't go much beyond the superficial basics, since it is created from and for the mass social consciousness. So anything deeper and more profound is what we bring with us, what we bring online to all of the above, and what we bring to our profile. Now, that's always kind of posed a big quandary for me. I find that I have changed so much, as we all do, but it seems like, in particular, I have really changed so radically and dramatically, even in the last year, that what I put, you know, a year ago or even a few months ago in my profile no longer is actually where I'm coming from now. And within this single incarnation itself, I've noted 8 distinct incarnational aspects that I have lived through and, in a sense, transcended and ascended back into the oneness. 8 distinct life cycle incarnations. You might look at those as aspects of my oversoul or whatever. I haven't mentalized too much in terms of trying to figure out what it is. It just is what it is. And I'm so busy integrating the next thing, I hardly have time to look back and assess, you know, what that is and what it involved. And yet I do want to share the process as much as I can, because I suspect that I'm not the Lone Ranger in this. I think that a lot of people are integrating aspects of themselves back in time from the future, which is what I currently am doing. So I have been very consciously multidimensional for some years now, and I'm now experiencing myself working in those 5 higher bodies of light that I've mentioned in previous shows. Won't go into that right now, but suffice it to say that each one of your vehicles of manifestation has an extended quantum consciousness level that goes hyperdimensional and that functions on its own. In other words, you can diversify your spirit. I've actually seen and experienced my 5 differentiated selves, if you will, having distinct lives in different periods and cycles within the timeline and the historical time cell itself. So these are interesting, what could we call them, quirks in our our sense of identity. But we now have a forum and a certain paradigm in place, a certain template, let's say, of reality understanding within the quantum physical understanding of life, where we can realize that we are holographic in nature. We're facets of one being, but within each facet, as within a hologram, the totality of the whole is contained. That means that wherever you look, at whatever you look at, is another aspect of your own beingness. You're only seeing yourself. You're only speaking to yourself. You're only serving yourself. You're only hating yourself or loving yourself or dealing with yourself, capital S, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. And that's the big epiphany, aha, that sooner or later we all directly experience. And we do have to directly have that revelation personally, because it can't be given. I can't give it to you. Some channel can't give it to you. You can't get it from a book. It comes of its own when it comes. I can't even lay out any kind of conditions. It just comes when it comes. I think it has a lot to do with similar to the ripening of a fruit. There's just simply a time when we are meant to ripen and manifest our divine identity more fully. And again, we have to be where we are until we're not, and do what we do until we don't. And meanwhile, we have to deal with here and now and where we're at in our consciousness. So we have a functional reality that gets us from point A to point B in the physical world, gets us to and from our jobs. It works within the context of our relationships and families and raising children and all of that. And yet, I found, and I'm speaking from personal experience now, that you can train yourself to remember, number one, that you are divine, and number two, that no matter what it looks like, it's a dream. It's simply Maya. It's a fictional reality that the separated mind has projected, but that in highest truth, you remain in that one beingness, that one existence, that one ever-expanding divine awareness and bliss or joy or Sat Chit Ananda, as it's called in Sanskrit. That is the true definitive of who and what we are forever. We are existence, awareness, bliss, pure being. And when you can remember that while you're changing diapers or running to buy milk and going through Walmart or whatever, if you can maintain that mindfulness while you're doing it, that's really a grand accomplishment. It's called being self-realized. And when you really get that going, then you're what is called a Jivan Mukta. You're walking in the world as a liberated free soul while you are functioning in this quasi-reality that we dream that we're having here. So let me ask you, if I may, to consider, ask yourself, how do you define yourself? You know, when you're faced with that, entrance profile, or you're beginning to go on to Facebook, or perhaps you've already posted a profile on Facebook. I've noticed that I have a lot of yogis and gurus and realized and people who are in various stages of divine realization as, quote, friends on my Facebook. In fact, almost everybody that I have friended or who has friended me is actually in some form of spiritual consciousness expansion. And because of that, many of them are realized they're operating as gurus or teachers or healers or mystics. And because of that, they, like myself, have a challenge in how to portray themselves without, you know, adding on what's called in the esoteric world glamour. Glamour is where you mood make and embellish and make yourself something that you aspire to be but aren't quite there yet. Now, most of us want to be very authentic. We're at the point where we don't want to fabricate an identity. We don't want to mood make our experience. We want to simply unabashedly be who and what we are now, right now. Given, you know, until you awaken as God, it's going to be a definition in some form and degree of limitation. And it's going to be something that will continually be upgraded and redefined as you awaken more fully and integrate more fully your full beingness. But as my Baba told me one day, he said, you will come to a point when you simply can no longer maintain your vibration low enough to sustain visibility in this time-space continuum. And I thought about that for a long time. I thought, wow, at some point, we just simply vanish from here. We can't densify and ground ourselves low enough in vibratory resonance to keep appearing within the dream field. We pop out of the dream, so to speak. And so we have that to look forward to. I actually thought that was happening to me this last few months, this summer, because I was going, as I told you, into episodes where everything would vanish into blinding white light. And there was no top, no bottom, no up, no down, no ground under my feet, no reality around me. There were no reference points. I have to admit I was a little freaked out. It was not exactly pleasant. So it's not that these things are going to be wonderful when they first happen, because they shake what you consider to be your reality. Now, I have integrated to a point to where now I have, again, a functional reality, or let's say a functional unreality, that enables me to do this radio show and relate, and, you know, at least see the floor under my feet and navigate through my home and see people. Although I must say I see the divinity more than I see the outer facade. I do see the God light, the God love, the God essence of others now in a way that I haven't as clearly before. So I'm betwixt and between levels of, let's say, integration, of new levels of revelation. And you'll find that's true for yourself as well. You keep upping the ante. You keep going deeper and deeper into that unified oneness that is all of us. And you began to lose that sense of differentiation and separation that has so kept us limited into a world of seeming disparity and difference. So, again, who are you? How do you define yourself and portray yourself online? You know, you're asked, for example, in most profiles like Facebook and so forth, they ask you, what's your religious affiliation, your political party, your relationship status, your gender, where you've gone to school, where you've worked, what your profession is, you know, your interests in general, what books you read, what movies you watch, what music you listen to, all of that stuff, because these all really matter to the personal ego self. The impersonal self, not so much, or not at all in rare instances. But again, you know, we're not here to sit on a rock and contemplate our navel. We're here to be out in the world as self-realized men and women, as initiates who have finally graduated from the becoming school into the state of divine being, which simply looks like a normal life lived with extraordinary goodwill, Yeah, and serenity. That's really as good as it gets. You're just really at peace with yourself and with the world and with other people. And that's how you can tell you're in that higher identity, because you're not in the drama. The drama just falls away, because you know whatever the drama is, it's only with yourself. And you prefer the peace of God to the dramatics of the separated self. So for the average person who strongly identifies with these things, there's usually no problem in stating one's biases, convictions, opinions, belief systems, and so forth. Aside from, you know, the usual privacy issues. But then if one is concerned about privacy, the internet social media venues are not really for you. You know, forget it. If you don't want your comment that you made, you know, out of your mean-spiritedness, if you don't want that to be out there in cyberspace forever, don't put it online. So how have you handled these online profile inquiries yourself? What comes up for you when you have to go deeper into the question of who am I and what do I believe? You know, we have that option to share. And I just naturally only want to share things that do not demean anyone. I just don't like to share things where they're pointing out an adversarial point of view against anyone or anything. I just don't want to be polarized or to put my energy into polarized states. And that's just not, you know, my personal thing. But I discovered that as I saw what I was sharing, you know, and I just always, you know, like to share things that are universal, uplifting, universally applicable, universally accepting, where everyone gets a chance to sit on the throne on the lap of Almighty God. No one is disenfranchised. No one is looked at or demeaned. Basically, all of creation comes out of the one and only Beloved. And all creation is held safely and securely forever within that one Beloved. And not one single soul will or could ever be lost. Why? Because we're only one. Only God is present here. Only Divine Spirit is present. There is no otherness. So that's my very strong conviction, and that's, therefore, the gist of the messages that I usually find myself posting or putting a comment or whatever. But that, you know, that's genuine for me. That's not mood-making on my part. It simply is a choice of what I would have real and what I want to put the bulk of my energy, focus, attention, and support towards. So, I suppose you have the same as I have, but, you know, just as a question you could ask yourself, have you given any serious thought as to how you do portray yourself online, and offline for that matter, when you're emailing or blogging or posting comments, or, you know, whatever it is that you're doing online? And another question, do you invent a fictitious name or a cutesy name to mask your identity? Is there some reason why you don't just use your name? Another question, do you post a photo of your pet or a flower or whatever, rather than your actual photo? And if not, why not? So if you've never come out, so to speak, as to who you really are as a person, this may be a good time to ask yourself why. What fears, excuse me, Guess I have some fear coming up, clearing through my throat chakra. Or maybe it's yours. Or maybe it's ours. I'm going to drink a little water here. Ah, it's good. So what fears come up for you about simply stating the basic facts about yourself as you currently see yourself? What fears come up? You know, a lot of people say, yeah, well, I, you know, had my head chopped off, I was burned at the stake, you know, I was thrown into a dungeon, I went to the rack, I was burned as a witch. You know, we have all of these storylines that the ego wants you to use so that you can hide behind the mask of fear and not come forward in that self that could never be touched, harmed, or in any way killed, that you really are. So see that as another face of the ego self trying to limit your divine expression and get over it. If everything is a lesson, and life here is like a university where one can enroll in many courses, what courses have you enrolled in here at EU or Earth University? How would you grade your progress, say, in the areas of self-approval and self-acceptance? Well, good questions, don't you think? And which groups, causes, and interests do you find common ground? In which group do you feel most at home and accepted? And is there any group in which you feel 100% free to be yourself? You know, that in itself may be an amazing discovery. A rare one, I might add. I find that I'm much like a chameleon in that I become one with the group or the person or the belief system that that particular group espouses and is hunkered down in. While I'm doing that, generally maintain the awareness of who I truly am and who other people truly are, but there have been times when I have lost myself in the group consciousness and totally lost sight of who I really was and who everyone else really was as I bought into various belief systems at different times. I choose to believe that that's part of the process of me bringing light into those areas and gradually bringing a greater understanding into that group, which may or may not be true, but I think it's important that you always win in your story, in your life drama. Always cast yourself as a winner. You know, why think anything less of yourself? So I find that very few, well, I actually can't think of a single group in which I could unabashedly be myself, really, quite frankly, absolutely, but bare honest. I can't think of any place where I could full on, truly, be myself. That's odd to say, but I remember what Sai Baba had to say about that, and I totally agree with it, because that's my experience too. Sai Baba said, and I'm quoting him, "When I am with women, I'm a woman. When I am with men, I'm a man. When I'm with children, I'm a child. And when I'm by myself, I am God." And that is absolutely my experience. When I am by myself, I'm everywhere. I feel myself expanded everywhere. I feel myself living in every place, every nation, every culture, in every heart, everywhere. And I'm just absolutely in a state of bliss. There's no thought, there's no mind, there's no thinking, there's no desire, there's just pure being, isness. And that's who I really am. And that's what I really want to share. And not very many people are probably very interested in being in that state, unless of course they are, because this world in itself is quite wonderful and quite fascinating. The dream can be quite a happy dream. I mean, we can have a lot of fun down here. And as long as you have sensual desires and ambitions and worldly goals and aspirations, there's nothing wrong with that. That's where you have to be where you are and live your life full on until you find yourself hatched, you know, out of that egg into another reality. So just, you know, don't feel that you have to be anything like me. This is my last incarnation. Sai Baba did grant me the experience of self-realization back in 1978 when I was attending, 78 or 79, when I was attending the, he would give a month, he gave a few times a monthly school of Indian culture and spirituality, which was a month long where he taught us directly himself. And the summer course that I went to, he, as Krishna, as Rama, as those ancient avatars himself, taught us about the Ramayana, or the Ramayana, however you wish to pronounce it, which is my all-time favorite story of Rama. And he also taught us the Bhagavad Gita and explained to us things as Krishna. Again, he was Rama and Krishna, so he was teaching us as Rama and as Krishna. And one day I just got it. I had what is called Atmadarshana, where I had self-realization. And I remember just laughing and laughing and laughing because it was so fun to suddenly pop out of the egg of illusion and simply be. And then, of course, you know, it took me some decades to you know, integrate that as an operative reality. And I've had, you know, many, many other experiences since that have even gone deeper. But suffice it to say that is the function of the avatar, is to actually bring those souls like myself who are here to finish it all off, to make this their last incarnation. And so I believe, because I am given this venue to speak to you, that I'm actually speaking to many of you who are also candidates for making this your last obligatory incarnation, that you're ripened fruits on the tree of life, ready to pop into degrees of self-realization and perhaps even God-realization. I mean, when you realize only God within and without, you're God-realized. That's it. End of the journey. At least the end of the journey in time and space and becomingness. And the journey, well, not the journey, but the state of absolute being opens then at that point, which we don't really discuss because it goes beyond the mind. But I think you catch my drift here and what I'm wishing to share with you, because I have had genuine experiences in living and being with the avatar for over 40 years. And spending months and months at a time living in his direct presence under his direct tutorage. And, of course, those of us that work with a master know that they work 24/7 from within you. And that's not to deny or denigrate the other wonderful teachers that I've had in my life, because certainly I have learned from my master teacher, John Roger, how to be consciously multidimensional and to function from conscious soul awareness. And that's another state, which is for me a very practical way to live in the Western modern world, where you see everything as a stepping stone to God and everything as part of your spiritual path. You don't have to adopt any special diet or special sadhana, which is spiritual practice, or I mean, we do have a spiritual practice, which is writing the sound current of God through the multidimensional levels within ourselves into the unified state of the One, which we also call the One Beloved. So that is a vehicle that we utilize, a carrier, a taxi, if you will, the name of God, adoration and repetition of the holy name of God, the holy names of God. And that is the path that I follow, which is called Sriracha Yoga. And that doesn't denigrate or take from the fact that I'm also a disciple of the Master Jesus and one who follows as closely as I possibly can in his way, which is the way of living love. So it all boils down to love, whether you look at Sai Baba or John Roger or Jesus. You know, they came only to reveal the way of love through grace. And they all work as one. They all work to help every man, woman, and child on the planet. All of the masters have the same directive, and that is to open the hearts of humanity and reveal the precious Christ, the precious Son of God, the precious avatar that each and every one of you are as divine incarnations. That's the whole thing in a nutshell. So I've been given the job to speak, to carry these messages forward in through the internet and through the venues that I am privy to access. And I trust that you realize by now, those of you that have been listening to these weekly seminars, that whatever I share, I'm always inferring the importance of really being your greater self, to call yourself forward into your greatness, into your magnificence, into your purity, into your holiness, because truly your holiness is your happiness. It is your wholeness. It is that which you have felt lacking. And it was your own acceptance of your own holiness, your own original innocence. And I believe that as you live, work, teach, share to the level and degree of your current state of realization, you know, the highest that you can reach into, as you consistently bring that forward, you will gradually and sequentially begin to jettison those layers of false conditioning that have kept you confined to littleness and inappropriate and inaccurate self-definition. So there are many support groups out there where people commiserate over their areas of weakness, but that is never what we are looking at here in these venues. I never, ever see you less than the one beloved. Ever, ever, ever. When I look at you, I always ask that I may see you through the eyes of the Christ, through the eyes of the Father, Mother, God, who only sees you as the Christ. So, who are you really to you? How do you go about being that? Without the need to emphasize or minimize your identity? And do you find your current self-definition to be an authentic one for you? So we're looking at authenticity, which I suppose here also is relative to where we are, you know, where we are positioned at any point. Because you can really believe that you're authentically being yourself and be totally deceived by the mind, the mood-making of the separative sense of self. I think that what we could look at here is if we see ourselves in any way different, separate than or better than another person, that it's safe to say that we're looking out of the ego. And whenever we are seeing the sameness and the oneness, we are looking out of that higher vision. So it's okay to be presenting ourselves simply as who and what we are right now, without any ego stroking or mood-making add-ons, or any self-minimizing false humility. You know, sometimes people put themselves down. I used to do that a lot in the early years, thinking that that was humility, but it was another face that the ego takes. The ego sometimes will posture as being super spiritual. That's where it's very busy telling everyone else how they have to live, what they have to do. John Roger calls such a person a keeper of the shoulds. So anytime we start shoulding on ourselves or another, we're qualifying for the title of keeper of the shoulds. Actually, the more enlightened you are, the more you recognize the enlightenment of others, and the less you find any need to say anything to anyone, about what they have to change or do, or anything. You, as I've often said, you leave people alone when you really love them. You let them be who they are and do what they do, and continue on with the things that give their life meaning and beauty and definition. Everybody's going to wake up, you know. You don't have to be the one that wakes people up. That's the job of the Holy Spirit. It's not our job to change anybody, to change ourselves, to change the world. What power do we have to change the world? We only have the power to decide we're either going to follow Christ or the ego. It's either going to be God or, ego. That's it. That's a choice. And really, that's not even a choice, because the ego is a total fiction. It doesn't really exist. So you're not an ego. That's just the belief in separation, and therefore that gives rise to fear. So until you're able to fully accept and approve of your human self, your outer world will tend to mirror back to you your own disapproval, your own rejection, your own, the things that you're afraid that you're going to have is what you actually call forward when you see yourself without your own benediction. So take a look. How does the world reflect you to you? You know, it's a very good mirror, this creation. So today the Internet has joined as a global community like nothing else in our history. The Internet and social media technologies are a pure expression of Aquarian Age energies, which is the air element of Aquarius. The Aquarian ray energies that qualify and give definition to this new era are the second ray of relationship, synthesis, cooperation, sharing, love, wisdom, and understanding. Then we have the fifth ray of science and technology. Then we have the seventh ray of organized design and formality. And then we have the first ray of pioneering leadership. And this paints, in terms of the ray energies that qualify this time cycle, a perfect picture of where we are spiritually as a global collective. And today, nothing can remain hidden. Our innermost secrets will be exposed for once and for all on the Internet. Because once it's shared on the Internet, it becomes available in cyberspace to everyone forever. And there never has been a total delete option that ever existed. So even though you look like you delete things, once you push that enter or that send, it's out there forever. So every thought, feeling, and sentiment is shared at some level throughout the entire collective consciousness grid, because all minds are linked. Soul is one, mind is one, life is one, and we just dream that we have a private or a separate life. It doesn't exist. So where can covert agendas, conspiracies, and our own deceit, which is what those other things simply mask, where can they hide now? Nowhere. At least not for long. Plus, the new millennium kids that are incarnating are super intuitives. They're super psychics and seers, and they are able to penetrate any secret archives. Nothing can remain hidden from these super psychic kids. So we are moving from the age of darkness and ignorance, the Kali Yuga, into the age of illumination, shared wisdom and truth, the Satya Yuga. And Sai Baba has said that this golden age of pure love, light, and peace will be in evidence by 2036 to 2050, somewhere in there. And so we're in that process now of transitioning into that. But that it's more of a state of consciousness than a chronological date. You know, it's not a chronological date where presto changeo, everything alakazam is transformed, because each person has to opt into that by the willingness to let that which is greater take over. They have to relinquish that separative attitude of the ego mind. They have to relinquish it. They have to let that be set aside and give full permission for that divine spirit to have at it, you know, to manifest through your life, through your mind, and to reinterpret how you see things. Ask to see through the eyes of Christ or Buddha or Sai Baba, whoever you want to hold forward as a great exemplar. Because at that level, they're all one. They're all one. Every master is one. It's just a different, let's say, flavor of the one. And, for example, some people are living in the golden age right now because they have realized their true divine identity. So nothing but our limited self-definition can block our entering that golden age right now. And the Internet offers us individually and collectively a way to create a new global vision and a new dialectic with one another. We're creating new conversations in ways that we are co-sharing this experience with each other now. And understanding develops as we broaden our exposure to different cultural values and ways of living and thinking. And prejudice is replaced by mutual appreciation as we learn to lay aside our ego's need to be right and superior at the expense of another. Spiritually viewed, the Internet is the form that our collective experience, learning, and wisdom is now taking. And it is the new global consciousness manifesting as our collective identity. This is our collective new identity, which is interconnection, intercommunication, and looking together at co-creating a more loving and gentle world, a more humane world. So mutual goodwill, respect, and courtesy obviously are still sorely lacking in much of the online commentaries. And yet often there is also a comment, at least one or two, that will call out that behavior for what it is: ignorance and mean-spirited prejudice. So still, the religious and political arenas remain the most polarized and contentious. So you have to ask yourself here, how do you define yourself spiritually and politically so that you're not polarized and separative, but at the same time you're authentically stating where you are right at the moment? And ask yourself, do you tend to adapt or adopt polarized stances where another person or group is seen as less admirable? Do you do that? Do you find yourself polarizing? You find yourself more against things than you are for things? Like Mother Teresa, when she said, "I will never march against war, but I will always stand for peace." And that's, you know, that's an option. So when you polarize yourself against a person or a nation or a world leader or a cause where somebody has to lose because of your positioning, how do you feel inside when you do that? And Jesus would ask you here, as he does in A Course in Miracles, would you rather be right or happy? Would you rather experience peace instead of this? Good question, huh? So I have to ask many people here, do you really want 2/3 of the world's population to be destroyed in wipeout tsunamis, earthquakes, and all-out doomsday Armageddon? Do you? Or, you religious zealots, do Do you really want everybody but the ones that believe exactly like you do to burn an eternal hellfire and damnation? Just because they don't share your religious bias? If not, then why in the world do you spread doomsday messages and give all that energy to such ugly imagery? Why? Why post things that frighten and discourage people? Make them depressed, make them feel hopeless, make them feel frightened. Why? It's a good thing to consider when you think what you're going to be, you know, posting or commenting or sharing or whatever. And do you realize that all religions were created by men with political agendas and control issues? Do you realize that Jesus of Nazareth had nothing to do with the creation of Christianity? Nor did Buddha have anything to do with the creation of Buddhism and so forth. None of the great sons of God ever, ever, ever started a religion. So it's time to create new conversations via our social media contacts and online friends. And that's the way we are rewiring our brains and learning to think and live outside of our little personal boxes and belief systems. We're learning how to allow our loving kindness, our smile, to be conveyed in our emails and in the comments and posts that we are putting out there. We're learning how to be softer, kinder, more compassionate. At least, you know, that's an available option for us all now. We can now begin to see ourselves as global citizens, as national, as the nationalism of the national ego gives way to something greater and more expansive within us. You know, we can call that forward instead of being, you know, flag-waving nationalists. Let's become universalists. So the new manifestation of charity will be seeking ways to generate happiness in one another and across the planet. We'll cease being so interested in spreading internet gossip about the darkness out there in the world and in the world leaders and people of other persuasions. And we'll become far more interested in sharing whatever is uplifting and encouraging and inspiring new creative ideas and solutions. We'll learn to treat others truly as we would like to be treated ourselves, with respect, kindness, and understanding. We'll learn to think before we click send or push that enter key. Was it kind? Was it true? Was it really necessary and truly helpful what I just typed? Or text? And if anyone is degenerated, disrespected, demeaned, and saddened in any way, you know it came from the ego mind and not from your true, authentic self and heart. New non-polluting industries and softer footprint technologies are being birthed as we speak. We will not be returning to the old ways we made a living before. This is a new cycle. And a better and kinder lifestyle is beckoning us. This is how we're co-creating the new paradigm over the internet of all things. Who knew? Who imagined it would be like this? But here it is, and here we are, and this is what is happening. So how do you define yourself online and before the global community? What energies and attitudes are you sharing electronically throughout the network? And those of you who have awakened beyond the personal self into your higher universal self, are you sharing your deeper insights and the essence of your realizations without portraying yourself as the great poobah? Remember, no matter how great we are, our greatness must always be eclipsed by divine unconditional love. That is true greatness. So we have an opportunity to all be global way showers, internet beacons, and bearers of light, and paradigm-shifting leaders. The World Forum is available at the click of a mouse and at the flick of your finger. Has any generation ever had a wider audience and a more prominent and effective podium? You know, recently a youth started a global movement that soon became international and viral by simply creating stickers that said, "You are beautiful," and putting them up everywhere. And now they have gone out into every language throughout the world and also created a way for products to be generated with this idea, "You are beautiful," which creates a new form of income and jobs for more people, as well as generating greater global happiness. How simple, a sweet expression of appreciation. Don't we all just want that? So let's go out chanting on IHU and join in that one heart that we all share. Deep breath. On IHU. Peace be to all. Adonai.